And now for WEEI Football Sunday with Arkand, Mego, and Shime. Now, WEEI Football Sunday.
Good morning. Welcome in. WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arkand here. Chris Shime here as well. Megan Ottolini here. Mego? I hear something that sounds like Mego.
Hey, what's up, guys?
There's Mego. Oh, it's a very...
Mego, is it raining? On it.
It's going to be a struggle with Mego today, I think. We got a little bit of a technical problem there, but we will continue on. We will march forward, even though it is a short show today, and that is because the Red Sox are playing a doubleheader. The game got rained out last night, so we will be jumping out of here at 11:30. But before that, we have a lot to get to, a lot to react to from Thursday still. I think the rebuild timeline, Shime, is adjusting on the fly. I do think the Drake May timeline may be getting moved up as well, and I think there's some real questions about this defense that need to be answered before we start talking about this team having any building blocks to really go forward with. But let's start with you, and then we'll get to Scratchy McGee over here. What's your main takeaway, I guess, with a couple of days of hindsight on what we saw on Thursday night?
Yeah, this offense is brutal to watch, and I think a lot of it stems from the play calling. I think the play calling has been atrocious, but I also think your quarterback is just, he's not built for this. This is not his gig. He is a backup quarterback. He is kind of destined for that, has been all along. That's why he's kind of been that way his entire career. It's about time you get ready to start the young guy, right? You have a mini bye week this week. It's the perfect opportunity to get him ready to go. I know the Niners seem like a really tough test, but they are injured. They're beat up. They just got beat by Sam Darnold. Anything is possible at this point. I think you just let the young kid play, even if it is against the 49ers. He's going to take his lumps no matter who he's playing, whether it's the Niners or the Titans, doesn't really matter. So get him out there, start him early, and get him going.
All right. I think there's a lot of people who are on your side of the fence with that now about Drake May. There's still some people holding out, obviously, but and some people who just want to wait one more week and wait for that home game against the Dolphins, which I didn't. We'll hear that argument as well, but I'm kind of on your side here. I think that it's time now to make a move. It's not going anywhere with Jacoby Brissett. He's probably better served as a backup. And even if Drake May goes out there and gets hit a little bit, which I'm expecting he will, I'm expecting any rookie quarterback's going to go out and get hit. They're not used to that kind of pass rush. It's a whole new thing. Whether
he
got a
hit
good offensive line tonight, he did, yeah.
And I think getting hit isn't necessarily a bad thing, right? Like, I think when he took that first hit where he was kind of trying to maneuver out of the pocket, spun around and got speared to the ground, he popped back up and he kind of cleared his head a little bit. Like, he looked a little nervous at first, but after that hit, he looked much better. He looked a little cleaner outside of the snap that came way too early, which isn't necessarily his fault. But then he made an absolute laser of a throw to Pop Douglas over the middle. So, like, I think that kind of put him in the right mindset.
All right, let's go to Mego, who is live from the inside of a seashell right now. Mego, with the element of hindsight here, anything stick out about that game Thursday night?
I mean, okay, I'm very nervous because I feel like this take won't come across the way I intend if I'm coming from the inside of the seashell. I can't believe you guys want to start Drake May after watching that on Thursday night. I wrote about this immediately after. I can't imagine a situation that is less suited to start that quarterback right now. He was in there for 4+ minutes, and we'll get into the reason why they put him in there, which I think was the right call. I think the situation, like, to have that experience, it made sense to put him in there at that time and get him some real game speed and game experience. But he got hit. He got sacked twice in 4+ minutes, and I look at the state of the offensive line. Maybe they get City Sal back at some point in the next 2 weeks. Maybe Vidarian Lowe can play left tackle. But they might not even be in the situation of getting to choose whether or not they put him out there to start. He might just have to go out there. So I say, like, let him continue progressing behind the scenes. Otherwise, it feels like you're sending a lamb out to slaughter with how disorganized the entire personnel is right
now. All right. And listen, Mego, I think that you, despite the fact that this is a very fuzzy connection that we have right here, can you pot her down just for a second, Jacob? We got to figure this out if we're gonna keep going back there, because that was, the take was fine.
Yes,
the take certainly, and there's a reason why I think you don't necessarily want to throw him out there to the wolves, and I understand why people are still saying that, and I don't think it's the craziest thing in the world, but I do think at some point you got to start the clock here, and it's just the more you put it off, the more I think it's not so much about Drake May, it's about you. You know, it's about the fans and the coaching staff maybe having to watch a couple of some growing pains and not wanting to start that process yet. Because, you know, it's like, well, if he's no good, then what's everyone going to say? Well, then everyone's going to leave. If you still have that ace in your back pocket, you know, and that's, I'm not saying he's an ace, but like he's a marketable thing for this team. He's an exciting aspect of this franchise and this organization. And if you play that card too early, maybe they feel like that's gonna be bad for them, you know,
yeah,
not just so much him.
You know, they knew it was going to be a bad season regardless. Like,
right.
Kraft said before the year, like, no matter how many wins we have, like, you know, we're building something. And they knew they weren't going to be good. So if you play Drake May, he's bad, that's good for you, because then you know in the next draft you need to attack quarterback again, or in free agency, or however you want to do it, you need to attack the quarterback position again. If you continue to wait, you'll know less about what you have, and he's not going to get much better just by sitting there behind Jacoby Brissett. And that's not how it works. Contrary to what Alex Van Pelt tells you,
right,
that is not how it works in the NFL.
By the way, you notice a little conflict there?
No, I didn't.
Alex Van Pelt says, I think he's going to learn more by watching. What did Gerard Mayo say?
Did Gerard Mayo say live by, like, by reps?
Gerard Mayo said football players get better at football by playing football.
Hmm.
Not by watching others play football, but by playing football.
Which,
that is a direct quote. And that, you know, it sounds like a bit of a conflict to me.
Well,
or it sounds like Van Pelt gets all the say here in what goes on with the quarterback, and Mayo's just sort of along for the ride, which I could also see being the case.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think there was a lot of us that, when the season started, felt like Mayo had come around on the idea of starting Drake May in week one,
yeah,
but it was Elliott Wolf and Alex Van Pelt are like, whoa, 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 pump the brakes, bud. Like, let's not do this too quick here. And they decided to go with Brissett.
Yeah, I think that's really a good indication or a good summation of what may have gone on there. Either way, the Jacoby Brissett era is off to a brutal start.
Brutal.
And this is in a NFL season where there's been some tough starts for these quarterbacks. And we'll get into all of that, too, because we're going to look ahead to all the games today and tonight and tomorrow night as well. There's a doubleheader tomorrow night, right?
Doubleheader tomorrow night. We got Bengals, Commanders, and Bills, Jaguars.
I love a good Monday night doubleheader, don't you?
I do, too. And I like why they did it this year, too, where they only staggered it like an hour. Instead of making it 7 and 10,
right,
where it's like one for the East Coast, one for the West Coast, it's 1 at 7, 1 at 8. So you can kind of watch them both simultaneously, which is nice. Flip
all
back
right
and forth.
All right, let's go back to Ariel under the sea here. Mego, do we see Drake May next Sunday? Do you think that's the decision they're going to make? You wouldn't do it, but do you think the team does it?
Guys, I think we're going to try to troubleshoot this at the break.
Okay, let's go ahead and do that then. All right, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. That was still very, very much under the sea.
It sounded like she was trying to do ASMR, like under a tin roof when it's pouring rain.
Football ASMR with Mega.
Yes, we're here to break down the all-22s here.
Yeah, that wouldn't be the weirdest thing we've aired on this on these airwaves.
Oh, by
before.
No means.
Certainly not. Anyways, if you want to jump in, 617-779-7937. Do you think the team makes that decision for Sunday? Is Drake May going to be the quarterback?
No.
Next Sunday.
Unfortunately, no. I think what you heard from Gerard Mayo and Alex Van Pelt the day after the game would indicate that there's no shot Drake May is starting week four, which I think is dumb. It's the perfect opportunity. The Miami Dolphins may be an easier landing spot in week five, but you have a perfect opportunity with that mini bye week now. Having played on Thursday, you get three extra days here to prepare the kid, to get him ready. This is as good as it gets for an opportunity to start Drake May.
Yeah, it is. I mean, for me, I'll be honest, for me, it's a little bit of impatience, too. There's not much else we need to really see here. I don't think I need to see much more of Jacoby Brissett to know what kind of season it's going to be and what kind of play he's going to give you, even against, you know, not great
teams. Know what he is.
You know what he is, and this is a tough schedule that you have this year. It's not a great schedule for a quarterback like him. You're going against tough defenses most weeks, and that's just the way it is. You know, sometimes you get an easier schedule. Sometimes the division isn't quite so stacked, but this year it happens to be. Like, the Dolphins aren't a bad defensive team.
No.
And everyone's talking about them like they're
making
this easy landing spot, and you're just going to go in there and Brissett or whoever, you know, Drake May in his first game will go out there and the
Skylar
Dolphins
Thompson will be fine.
They won't give him any problems, and it's like they have a good secondary and they have good guys up front. Like, you know, that's not a bad defense. They've been emphasizing that in their offseason because they, I don't know, like to get better and fill in around things that aren't necessarily strengths of their team, something that the Patriots just refuse to do this offseason.
And I would ask you this question, like, when it comes to starting Drake May, when you look at Jacoby Brissett, prior to the season, everybody said, well, yeah, he doesn't turn the football over. He's really
right.
smart with the football, right? So isn't I don't know, taking like two sacks and three plays equal to just turning the football over? Like, you're punting either way. Would you rather just, I would rather have something like what Josh Allen does is on, you know, third and 11, he's just going to rip one downfield, 50 yards downfield, and maybe they'll make a play, maybe they won't, maybe it'll be picked, but like if it's picked, oh, well, it's a punt anyways. Right. Who cares? That's the part to me that bugs me is he's supposed to be smart, he's supposed to be this veteran, but he never throws the ball away. Instead, he'll take a sack, which is probably worse than just trying to throw to a receiver.
Yeah, sometimes it is, but then, you know, that sack he took, well, that throw to Austin Hooper.
He just misses a wide open throw.
I hate to really harp on that because it was throw in a game where the one throw wouldn't have made a difference in the final score either.
But
Isn't that sort of what it was? Like, that sticks out in your mind just because it was one of those plays where you look at it and go, man, you know, those aren't coming easy to him.
No.
Those might not come easy to Drake May. I hope they do. I mean, I hope it comes easy to any quarterback. But, like, with him, like, this is a veteran. This is a guy who's been around the block a bit, you know, someone who has to be able to rely on those kind of throws at this point in his career. And it's just like, it's not there.
And I think it was magnified, too, at the fact you were facing Aaron Rodgers and he was locked the F in. Like, he was ready to cook, and he looked healthy and like old Aaron Rodgers. And so it just was magnified the fact that you had ineptitude at quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. It's a short show today, so we'll go to the phones early and often here. Start with Walter, who is in Worcester. Hi, Walter in Worcester. What's up?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Going.
I love talk radio. I love this show. But listen, I think the manner in which everyone around here in this local landscape has flipped on this New England team. I watched that first Cincinnati game, and I must have watched a different game than everybody else, because I came out of that game thinking, well, we're a really bad team. And I heard a lot of folks on talk radio saying, oh, wow, they're better than we thought they were. Jacoby is who we thought he was. This team is who we thought they were. They're a bad football team. That Cincinnati team always loses the first game. I really thought it was a Cincinnati game, the team that lost the game. And, you know, it wasn't the Patriots winning the game. I'm with you guys. I think we need to put May in. I'm a little bit nervous about it, but you got to give us something to look forward to, because this is just a disaster that we're watching right now, guys.
Thanks for the call, Walter. You were also under the sea with Mecca.
What is up with these tough lines?
I don't know what's going on here today. But I understand that. I mean, listen, he's not the only one who wasn't super impressed by that week one win. I was, because I thought this team wasn't going to be able to compete with a team like the Bengals week one, week 10, week 7.
You had the Bengals scoring like 30.
I thought that they were going to light you up. And then the next 2 weeks, you got lit up by Geno Smith and Aaron Rodgers. So I was only off by a week.
To be fair, Geno Smith is playing some of the best quarterback in football right now. And Aaron Rodgers looked like prime Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
well, that's true. And so I think maybe, and I don't even think it's our defensive front, because I think Keon White's still been really good. I think Uche has been really good. I think Dietrich Wise has been good. I think mostly it's just we overrated the secondary a little bit. Outside of Christian Gonzalez, the secondary has struggled immensely covering receivers. Like, Christian Gonzalez was great on Garrett Wilson.
Yep.
When he was on DK Metcalf, he was good. He was great on Jamar Chase. Outside of him, that secondary is struggling, and quarterbacks are just kind of picking you apart with it.
Yeah, it seems that way. And listen, I like Keon White. I don't know that these other guys, like, Uche's having a good year, you know? Like, I don't see them getting to the quarterback. I didn't see Geno Smith hit the ground once. Aaron Rodgers, there was two sacks on Aaron Rodgers. I don't really remember them. But it didn't seem like he was under siege most of that game.
They pressured Geno quite a bit. He was just moving and making throws like crazy. I think that was more just Geno kicking your ass than anything. And then Aaron Rodgers, sure. Yeah, I don't think you got quite as much pressure on Aaron Rodgers as you wanted to. But a couple of times, there was one in particular, I think it was Uche coming off the left side, had pressure on Rodgers, but because, you know, Rodgers is good and can actually move now, ducked under the pass rusher, rolled out to his left, and made a completed pass to, like, Tyler Conklin or Jeremy Ruckert. So, that's the other thing that bugs me.
Those tight ends killed you in that game, boy. Both of them did.
That's the other thing that bugs me, too, is that you're just getting cut up by guys that are just nobodies. You're getting cut up by a guy named Jeremy Ruckert. Like, this guy's like the second tight end on the Jets roster, and he's just there to pass block, and he was eating you alive. And that's kind of what bugs me.
Yeah, well, I mean, a guy like Rodgers can get him the ball. A guy like Rodgers can orchestrate an offense 100%. Like that. And, yeah, you're right. They weren't covering anybody. And what killed me the most, every single time he got a handoff to one of those two running backs, they rolled off the first tackle. Like
that Braylon Allen one in the back. Uche had him dead to rights.
They could not tackle anybody. Uche, whether it was the guy that's in the secondary, whoever it was. By the way, he waits 3 years to tell us how to pronounce his name? That's a little weird, right?
Yeah. Well, and yeah.
Isn't that like, first year, why don't you say, hey, it's Uche, guys? Yeah. He waits until now, and it's like, hey, actually, you know, it's Uche. It's like, well, wait a minute. Yeah. We're calling you Uche pretty distinctly on national broadcast, locally, everywhere. Everyone's called you one name, and now you're just sort of suddenly speaking up about it? Like, I find that odd.
It caught me so off guard in the broadcast, too, the way Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit were pronouncing it. It was so
They were wrong.
Enunciated.
I thought they were given a Gerard Mayo type of situation.
Yeah, I thought they were calling somebody O'Shea. I'm like, who's this on our defense named O'Shea?
O'Shea
Brissett is now playing football. I'm confused, and then I realized it was Josh Uche, and I was very confused.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm glad we finally got it right. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We will try and reconnect with Mego. Whether we do or not, we will be reacting to the emotional roller coaster. She put out a poll about the AFC East last night, and we'll react to it and the results right after Chris Scheim tells you what's trending.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims. Sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
All right, it is time for the emotional roller coaster here on Football Sunday. It's WEEI, Christian Arcand, Chris Scheim. We had to cut Mego loose. We had to set Mego adrift.
Set her free.
Yeah, it was just something was going on with the equipment there. She is up in Maine. We all know the internet doesn't really come in great up there.
No, it is like its own separate continent. All of like the 12 people that live in Maine.
Well, is she in Maine 1 or Maine 2? You know, there's two Maines.
Ooh, there is. I didn't know this.
Yeah, there's two Maines. There's like the Maine part of Maine, and then there's the northern Maine where like all the loggers live.
Oh, okay.
And that's like
Maine, the Canadian Maine.
Yeah, that's Maine 2. I think they have like their own government and stuff up there.
Really?
Like,
interesting.
Yeah. I may be.
Is it like the king of the north? He kind of just does his own thing?
It's a little bit like that. Yeah, there's a big wall, and there's dragons flying around.
A lot of people
swords.
That's
basically what it's like up there, yes.
Got it.
Anyways, we are getting some calls already about Boston College and what they accomplished yesterday in the Red Bandana game. Tremendous game, by the
awesome.
Way.
Awesome.
It is Football Sunday, not just Patriots Sunday.
Yep.
And I'll be honest with you, folks, the Patriots aren't looking too great these days.
BC so looks great.
We'll take BC calls. Also, my Colorado Buffaloes. Don't know if you stayed up to watch that one. Mwah! That was beautiful. Shadur Sanders with a Hail Mary at the end of the game, reminiscent of Cordell Stewart against Tylon, Michigan back in the 90s, but I'll save that for another time. Right now, we're talking about Mego's poll, and Mego's poll today was, who do you think will emerge at the top of the AFC East by the end of the regular season? You know the teams in the AFC East, Patriots, Jets, Dolphins, and Bills. First of all, before I give you the results, and the results are, I think, a little eye-opening here. I'm surprised by the by how much of a swing there is. Who do you think is going to be at the top of the AFC East?
Yeah, I have been firm on this since before the season. It's my MVP. Give me Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills. Easy.
Okay. I at the beginning of the year, thought that the Bills were going to really struggle. I thought this was going to be the Jets and the Dolphins. I thought the Bills lost way too many guys on that defense,
yep.
Way too many guys on the offense, and that Josh Allen's good, but that, you know, it's you got a great offense there in Miami. You have Aaron Rodgers coming back with the Jets. I feel like it would be hypocritical of me after two games, two admittedly very good Josh Allen games, and their running game has looked tremendous, by the way, too.
James Cook looks awesome.
He looks like one of the top backs in the league right now. But that's, again, two games. It's a small sample size, and I still think that at some point the lack of a passing game is going to hurt them more than it has so far. So I'm going with the Jets. That's who I picked. I think Aaron Rodgers, if he stays healthy, and again, these are all big ifs here, but if he does, then you're looking at, I think, the best quarterback in the division. I love Josh Allen, but I think that Rodgers is better. Aaron Rodgers, So, like, the last 2 years, the MVPs were Lamar Jackson and Patrick Mahomes.
Correct.
The 2 years before that, the MVPs were Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Rodgers.
Yes.
Like,
after he took his ayahuasca.
He very recently was the best quarterback in the league for two straight seasons. Back-to-back MVPs.
Mm-hmm.
And people are acting like that injury last year has knocked him completely out of commission, and he's never going to be that again. And I don't know. I mean, maybe the Patriots' defense is a lot worse than I thought. In fact, it probably is, which we'll get to in a little bit here. But that that performance has me leaning back towards the Jets. Now, we'll see if the Bills actually slow down at all. And right now, it seems like the public agrees with you, Chris Scheim. And I don't know how Mego voted on
this.
Which
I'm surprised.
But the Bills are overwhelmingly in front here at about 500 votes. 64% of the vote going to Buffalo, 22% going to the Jets. The Patriots getting 11.5%, which
is shocking.
Hilarious. And then there's the Dolphins at 1.7%, which I understand the Dolphins lost their quarterback, but at least they had a quarterback to lose.
I also wouldn't
count an offense that you can maybe run with a lesser one.
I also wouldn't count the Dolphins out just yet. Like, Tua's only going to be
out. I'd count them out of the number one spot, maybe.
Maybe, but yeah. Like, if you are firmly in the camp where, you know, you felt like the at some point the Bills would struggle, I don't think you can count the Dolphins out quite as much as this poll would indicate, just because I think that Tua will come back here in 3 or 4 weeks, and he will play, and they're going to be pretty good again. And if he stays healthy for the rest of the season, which is a huge question mark, I fully understand that, they have the talent to absolutely win the division.
Yeah, I think so, and I do think Tua is going to come back. And we talked about this last week, and it's unfortunate that it's going to be up to him and, you know, team doctors and not someone else, but that's the way it is. I mean, these are adults. These are people with free will, and you can't stop them from doing something if they get medically cleared under their own conditions and if they want to come back and do it. And I think that's exactly what Tua wants to do, which is, again, unfortunate. I think we're all going to have to witness this happen because no one's going to stop watching football. So we're all going to have to just watch Tua and watch what happens next and pray for the best here, but it seems like this is a situation that's not going to be dealt with in the way that maybe a lot of people were expecting or hoping for. And yeah, he probably will come back, and I think eventually this is going to start catching up to him.
Absolutely.
At some point, he's not going to be able to go out there and perform, even with this great offense around him. Eventually, it's going to take its toll on his decision-making, on his depth perception, like on all these things that make it hard for someone to play professional sports when their brain's damaged.
Isn't it surprising, I think, from like a team building perspective, that the Dolphins weren't a little bit more ahead of this? Like, you, coming into the season, like, you knew his history with concussions and you knew the possibility of it.
And
your backup quarterback, Skylar Thompson.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't draft anybody. You didn't really get anybody in the building to start, like, getting ready for a post Tua world. Especially because you just paid him $250 million.
Right.
Like, I felt like that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Not great preparation, I would say.
No. But then again, the New England Patriots haven't had great preparation the last couple years either.
That's
so
true.
Really,
but you get to a point with these quarterbacks and these big contracts where you have to bleep or get off the pot. You know,
like,
you can't wait around.
But I think what the Falcons are doing isn't a terrible idea. Mm. Is it's like, yeah, they paid $180 million to Kirk Cousins. After week one, though, you thought Kirk Cousins might be cooked. Week two was a whole different story.
Sure.
That 2-minute drive was spectacular. But you have Michael Penix in the back just kind of like waiting and just waiting his turn. And if Kirk Cousins ever went down, it's slide Michael Penix, a first-round quarterback, into an elitely talented offense, and boom, you keep running. You keep chugging.
Yeah. His rookie contract expired last year, I want to say, or did they extend him, I think. Maybe that was it. Yeah, he signed a 4-year extension, which started this year.
It starts next year. This is the fifth-year option in his rookie contract.
That's right. So they were going to come up to a point with that anyway.
Correct.
Which is different from the Penix and Cousins situation, but I know what you mean.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something to be said for that. But with these quarterbacks, especially ones who are sort of in between, like, he wasn't a guarantee, we've got to pay this guy, we got to give him top of the market money.
There was
questions about him, his injury history, obviously, and the fact is, what is he when he's not surrounded by a big, great offense like this? What if, you know, Tyreek Hill goes down?
Or retires,
or Waddle goes down or something, and you lose your running backs, which they do every weekend, and it's got to be just him to go out and win games. Is he that kind of quarterback? And I don't think that is definitely a yes.
He's never proven that.
I don't think he has ever been that. Yeah.
No, I don't think he has ever once proven that he is going to go win you football games without those talented players. And I mean, luckily for him, the Dolphins just continue to load up and find talented players. I mean, Devon Achane seems like an absolute stud that you get in like the second or third round of the draft, and you just plug him in and play. And Raheem Mostert was a guy they picked up off the scrap heap. He knew the Mike McDaniel offense. He had 20 touchdowns last season. Like, this is just if they continue to find players in that way, kind of similar to what some other great teams have done, you know, teams like the 49ers or the Lions now as well, like if they continue to do that, then like Tua will be fine because he'll just constantly have talent around him. But it comes down to, you know, when are you in a Mahomes situation where you're throwing to Marquez Valdez-Scantling as your best receiver? What are you going to do?
Mecole Hardman, your Super Bowl MVP.
Kadarius Toney.
Yeah, well, stop throwing to him. But I know what you mean. All right, so you think Buffalo's going to take the division?
Yes.
Are the Jets a playoff team?
Absolutely. I think, especially with the injury to Tua, I think that makes the Jets a lock for the playoffs at this point. Especially, I mean, what I saw on Thursday night, the Jets are a force to be reckoned with. I think the defense is a little overrated. You saw week one, kind of San Francisco just gash them in the run game.
Yeah.
I think they can be had a little bit more than people lead on. So that could be an issue. But I think if Rodgers is healthy, that offense is going to be elite with a two-headed monster at running back now with Braylon Allen, who is just a banger. I love him. And then Garrett Wilson, if Mike Williams comes around at all, that offense is going to be good.
Yeah, the offense is looking pretty sharp so far. An offense, by the way, that had a very bad offensive line last year. And you know what they did in the offseason?
Got
they
fixed three new it. Guys.
Yeah, they fixed it. They went out, they traded for a guard from the Ravens.
John Simpson.
John Simpson. They signed Tyron Smith, and they traded for Morgan Moses, who was also, I think, a Baltimore Raven last year. And they drafted the other kid, Fashanu. You know, so they went out.
Right. They haven't even played him, have they?
Yeah, well, they had to play him when, when Moses went out with the injury.
Correct.
Fashanu went right in. He was the 11th overall pick. He was Caden Wallace's teammate at Penn State, only he was an actual left tackle. And they had
drafted Elijah Vera Tucker like 2 or 3 years ago, and he's a stud.
Yeah, and he slotted right in.
And Joe Tippmann, they drafted at Ohio State, I think, last year, and he had been awesome.
All right, there you go. I didn't know that, but all right. So, there you have it. You had an offensive line that last year everyone said, oh, my God, O-line just got Aaron Rodgers killed. What are you going to do about it? And the Jets went out and did something about it.
Yes,
Patriots? Not really. Patriots got a bunch of table scraps and let Tyron Smith and Trey Morgan Moses. I'd be happy to have Morgan Moses or Tyron Smith. Either one of those two guys. I'm okay with not drafting the kid because I felt like if you're going to make a draft pick this year, I wanted to go either wide receiver or quarterback. I didn't think drafting an O lineman this year made a lot of sense, but whatever. I mean, listen, they saw something that needed to be addressed and they addressed it. And that's the Jets. We're not talking about some brilliant team here.
No.
We're talking about gangrene, the New York Jets. And they ran circles around you this offseason when it came to fixing that offense. You know who I like?
Ooh.
That Sherwood kid on the defense for the Jets.
Yeah, yeah.
The one who sacked Drake May.
Yeah.
And also had like a couple of big pops over the middle. Like, I'm watching. I don't feel like there's a lot of juice in the Jets-Patriots rivalry right now.
Yeah.
But I'm watching that game and I'm watching that guy. And he was only playing because Mosley was out. And I'm watching him going, yeah, all right. I'm starting to not like you, Sherwood. And when I don't like a player, it's like a good thing.
Well, it's kind of funny, right? The best linebacker on the team goes out. They have a kid come in and he looks awesome. Patriots have their best linebacker go out. It's filled by Raekwon McMillan.
And
I love Jelani Tavai. Juwan Bentley was not replaced by those guys on Thursday night.
No, certainly
he was
not.
Sorely missed.
You noticed he wasn't out there, and I'm not sure it would have been much different of a game if he had played, but still,
no.
I mean, that.
But it would have helped. Like, those tight ends wouldn't have killed you quite as much, I think.
That's a good point. He's better in coverage than either one of those guys. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. So there you go. I think the Jets are going to win the AFC East. Chris Scheim over here thinks it's the Buffalo Bills. I'm not sure what Mego thinks, but what do you think? 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Who's going to end up at the top of the AFC East? Our poll question of the day. I told you there were some BC calls lining up. David's in the car and has a thought on the soaring Eagles. What's going on, David?
Hey, still good morning. Good morning, guys.
Still good morning.
Great job. But here's the thing, guys, and I want to comment on Miami, so please don't let me go without me doing so. But first I want to talk about Boston College. Unbelievable. I was there with my kids. One of my kids graduated from there. Unbelievable game. At least we have something to look forward to, which is the the Eagles versus the Patriots are horrible. On Miami, guys, you guys may laugh, but this is my take. Mm-hmm. With Tua situation, Mac Jones is going to get traded to Miami. They're going to go.
No, he's not. The Jaguars aren't going to let him go.
Yes, he is. But, you know, money talks and trades talk. That's what it's all about.
What do you think it would take to pry him away, David and Scheim, while we're on the subject here? I think it would take second
really
or a third round pick, maybe, if you want to get a good backup quarterback.
Exactly. I haven't really dig deep into it, but it's one of those things that it makes sense. You need a quarterback in Miami, and Mac would fit that system.
I think you would too, David. Thanks for the call.
I don't think Mac would fit that system.
I think he'd be good in that system.
I don't think he'd be able to get the ball down the field enough.
He played with Waddle in college. I mean, that's a type of offense he never had here. He never had an offense with playmakers like that here before.
Sure, but he was like also throwing to wide open guys in Alabama. That was that's COVID year. He was facing Notre Dame, and they had me at linebacker covering Devontae Smith, which was stupid. And like my general point with that too is also, when was the last time the receiver won the Heisman over the quarterback? I'll wait.
Yeah, it's
and so
doesn't happen that much.
Yeah, and so like Mac Jones is not getting traded to the Dolphins. The Dolphins went and they'd rather sign Snoop Huntley for just cash instead of trading anything for a backup quarterback and Mac Jones.
Well, now that's what they may be thinking. But if a couple of weeks go by at Thompson and Snoop and it's not looking too good, then maybe they do start looking.
Snoop Huntley, former Pro Bowl quarterback.
It's true, so is Mac Jones.
Yeah, just as many Pro Bowls as Mac Jones. So, and I don't think that the Jaguars, to Mac's credit, he was really good in the preseason. Mm-hmm. And I think Doug Peterson likes him, so I don't think they want to trade him from Jacksonville. So unless they're going to get a haul for him, which isn't going to happen, you're not going to trade a third-round pick for a backup quarterback at this point, I don't think he's leaving the Jaguars.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that, especially if Tua comes back. I mean, that's
exactly
really
that's
what it's going to come
too.
Down to. Like, he'll probably come back.
He'll be back in 3 more weeks, and it's, you know, he'll be back, what is that, week 7?
Yeah.
He'll be back in week 7.
And the team's going to say, hey, you know, we put him on IR. We did what we're supposed to do.
This is his decision. He's coming out, and
he wants to come back. We got to play him.
Good.
You know,
doctors
like,
cleared him.
Paying him $50 million.
Yep.
Like, I think we're going to have to pay him. Put him out there at the very least. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Looking around the rest of the NFL here, and we will certainly take a look at the slate of games coming up. Who has been the biggest surprise in the league so far, would you say?
Yeah, it's without a doubt the Minnesota Vikings for me. Like, this team is legitimately good. Sam Darnold looks revived. Like, this it might be the Sam Darnold renaissance here. We might be in it, folks. It might be Geno Smith-esque.
Can it be a renaissance if he was never good to begin with? Just a naissance.
I thought Sam Darnold was always talented, but he was one of those quarterbacks that just like struggled a lot. It wasn't Zach Wilson where I'm like, oh, this guy's just bad. It was, oh, there's some talent there. Like, there were a couple weeks when he was on the Panthers where he was really kicking ass to start a season, and then things kind of fell apart because they're the Panthers and they're a bad organization. However, with the Vikings, you have a really good head coach in Kevin O'Connell. The offense is schemed up pretty easy for Darnold. They have a good running game, and then Brian Flores has been in his bag calling that defense. I mean, Brock Purdy even went up to him after that game last week and is like, dude, you were throwing stuff at me I've never seen before in my life. That was amazing.
Yeah.
And so I think that kind of combination right now is really impressive. I wouldn't be shocked if the Vikings run away with a win tonight against the Texans. Like, I think they're that good, and they've been very surprising for me.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that game. It's a great matchup this week. My biggest surprise has been the Saints.
Yeah.
I don't know how you could. Yeah, 91
you're absolutely right.
Points in 2 weeks is ridiculous.
My guy, Derek Carr.
Yeah, Derek Carr. Kamara's having a monster year already. He had that 4-touchdown game. Like, that's a team that I had no expectations for this year and didn't really think there was anything that was going to push them to the top of that division. And right now, I don't know. I mean, listen, Atlanta's off to a better start than I was expecting, beating the Eagles. I didn't think they'd do that. Tampa Bay looks great. They're a candidate for this, too.
Have you seen the Derek Carr theories floating around?
The presidential
election
cycle, I did see that one, yes.
He's just, every time there's a presidential election, he just pops off. He's like the best quarterback in football.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of
I don't know what to make of that.
I don't either. Well, I mean, he was an MVP.
It means something.
In 2016, he was an MVP candidate. In 2020, 27 touchdowns, only 9 interceptions, over 4,000 yards, and 67% completed passes. And then this year in 2024, I mean, he is by far playing the best quarterback in football right now. It's not even close.
Interesting. What it really only says to me is that's some good longevity for a guy who I never thought was going to have much of a career, honestly.
Yeah,
I thought he'd bounce around a little bit. He's been, you know, he did bounce around. He went from the Raiders to the Saints, but he's been a starter in this league for at least 12 years now, right?
Yes.
It's
well,
been
actually,
3 election cycles.
This is my last gasp hope.
Or is it 10 years?
Derek Carr was one of my first prospect loves coming out of the draft. I loved Derek Carr. He got taken out of the second round out of Fresno State, and I'm like Derek Carr is going to be great. I made a bet with my buddy, $100 said Derek Carr would make a Super Bowl in the next 10 years. It's the final year, so I really need the Saints to continue to be good and Derek Carr to make a Super Bowl, otherwise I'm going to lose my bet.
This is his 11th season, second one with New Orleans. He had 9 with the Raiders. Oakland to Las Vegas.
And I mean, like, he was an MVP candidate one time, had like the Tony Romo back injury, and
2016,
then kind of
and
then fell off for a long period of time, but has since like kind of been revived a little bit. He's been known to be that, you know, check down king, high completion percentage guy. But I mean, you incorporate Clint Kubiak, who just has a whiff of the Kyle Shanahan system, into this offense, and they look like absolute world beaters. I mean, they were the first team since the 07 Patriots to have like back-to-back games of 43-plus points to start a season.
Yeah, and looking around the rest of the offenses in the league, it's really standing out. All right, 617-779-7937, the phone number. That's a 1 o'clock game against the Eagles today that I'm very interested in.
Going to be really good.
It's not a good Eagles defense this year so far. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk with Fitzy, get his take on the week that was the Patriots' ugly loss on Thursday night. I listened to him on Six Rings afterwards, and he sounded despondent. Hopefully he's recovered a little bit since then. And we just talked about our biggest surprises. We'll go with our biggest disappointments in the league so far as well. We'll take a look at the Sunday slate, and we'll have Pop Lock and Drop later on as well before we hand things off to the Red Sox. But first, these words. Oh yeah, don't look now, by the way, but your running back fumbles every game. Every single game there's a fumble.
That's not
just
great.
That's the thing. We're leaning heavily on this run game. That's like the big part of the offense that everyone's all proud of, peacocking around after week one, and the guy fumbles literally every single game. He's on pace for 17 fumbles. I don't think he'll get there, but he is on pace for that right now. And speaking of pacing yourself, joining us on the access right now is my friend and yours, Fitzy, is here. Nick Fitzy Stevens. Hello, Fitzy. How you doing?
Oh, it's always great to jump on Sunday 7 and have Al Michaels and all of that Ambien and melatonin energy lead you in. Boy, just get you fired up for a... I mean, my God, but who among us can blame him? You know, he's making $11 million, and he, like the rest of us, wanted to get to bed or his next steak dinner without vegetables. But Thursday night was truly 3 hours in the veterinarian's waiting room for Patriots fans. It was just, it was so, I described it in the Sunday 7 at WEEI.com as truly a joyless slog that all of us cannot collectively wait to put in our rear view, to quote Ben Affleck from The Town, and just spend a Sunday worry-free. Like, at least today, as uncomfortable as I was watching that game, as disappointed as I was in the outcome and the performance, even if we expected it, Christian, at the same time, we just need to, like, go bask in the sunshine. I don't know, maybe start doing some Halloween shopping today, manage your fantasy team, take a walk, whatever, because I hate to say it, I feel like, and this is kind of what I've gathered from the fans that I've been talking to and I've seen online, I think people are bracing for more of what we saw in week three than what we saw in week one.
I think you're absolutely right. One thing I have not heard any caller, any texter, tweeter, anybody say is, well, it's just one game. You know, they'll bounce back. That was no big deal. It was just one little game. You know, it's a long season. There's a lot of football still to be played. No one is saying that. No. That was not that type of loss. There's losses like that where you look at it and you go, well, okay, you know, they gave it their best. It was a tough loss, but they'll be back next week. That was not that kind of loss. It feels different because it is different, Fitzy.
It completely does. And going into week three, Andy Hart had said on Six Rings that he thought that the Thursday night game was going to be a great test, a real referendum on the culture Gerard Mayo has been preaching and trying to install. And if he is cut out to be an NFL coach, then he was going to have that team with defensive injuries piling up, with offensive line constant rotating and shuffling, and a rookie left tackle who used to play right, but people have told us he can play left. Spoiler alert, it's harder than he thinks it is. And also, the offense's inability, all of that mounting, DeMario Douglas whining for the ball, that it would be a great test for his culture. Well, he got tested, and I hate to say, he and collectively all the coaches failed. And they need to fail now, because that's the whole, my old Batman principle, why do we fall? So we can learn to pick ourselves up again. Well, the Patriots fell, and then the Jets kicked them while they were down Thursday night. And now I feel like this next week, this is a huge test, because you got 10 days, you got the extra days off to look at the film, to heal up, hopefully. But I'm legitimately concerned, not just for the offense and Jacoby Brissett. The poor man looks like he walks away from five different car wrecks and then gets thrown into an industrial dryer for an hour. The way the guy gets up from the ground, he looks like an 80-year-old man getting out of his easy chair, you know, to go get something because the doorbell rang. He looks like he's in so much pain now. And my fear, team-wide, is that if they cannot advance the ball, if they can't sustain drives, the offensive line is only going to get worse. And then this defense, the injuries are going to start piling up on the defense, Arcand, because they're out there way too much. If your average game is 40 minutes the other team, 20 minutes for you, then you're going to see more guys, sadly, like Bentley and like Keon White and Peppers getting dinged up. And that ain't right.
Well, you talk about Jacoby Brissett looking like he's hurting. Do you start him in week four against the 49ers, Fitzy, or do you go to Drake May?
I hate to say it. You know, the way that you know, you've made me a May fan, and I cannot wait. I know the offense is going to be better, and I don't care, come hell or high water, about the turnovers, Shime. I really don't, because this season, bridge, development year, growth year, you know, whatever, silo-free football.
Let the Mayflower set sail.
Exactly. When Mayday, Captain. Come what may, I'm down for all the puns, all the expressions, all the fun, the growth, the mistakes, the touchdowns, etc. I am, however, concerned. Did you see? I know you did, Shime, and it's been replayed a million times on every football channel. The first hit he took when the kid's running for his life and he just gets absolutely smoked blindside on it. Now, he's fine.
Yeah, but I felt like that was good for him. Like,
get
it kind of knocked
up?
It knocked out the jitters, right? Because those first couple plays, he was kind of jittery. The very first throw was supposed to be a tempo throw. It ended up almost being picked. It's like, all right, dude, we need to settle. Everybody needs to settle
down.
That
would have been a tough start to the Drake May era if that ball got picked
up. Everybody would have thought it was just Mac Jones incarnate again. Yeah. And then he's scrambling out of the pocket, spins and gets speared to the ground. But as soon as he popped up, he was good to go. He was ready. He was locked and loaded after that.
Listen, I don't mind trial by fire, and the only real experience is in-game or on-field experience. I'm so much more about learning outside the classroom, getting internships, and learning in the real world, Shime. But at the same time, Dumbo dropping your quarterback into Pamplona in the middle of the running of the Bulls and saying, giddy up, guy, good luck. I mean, he literally, like, I want him to play because I would rather the Patriots lose 38-17 with Drake May, you know, throwing for 250, it'd be exciting. Two touchdowns, two picks, five sacks. If I thought this offensive line, you know, the key word of the year is what, Shime? Sustainable. That's one of the key adjectives and descriptives used by this team thus far.
That and collaboration, yeah.
Yes, it's usually, okay, this is not sustainable is how that's used exactly. In relation to this
well,
team.
Well, I think,
yes.
Christian, I think collaboratively we can all agree that it is not sustainable for Drake May to endure the same trauma that Jacoby Brissett has. Guys, the offensive line is so bad.
How bad is it, Fitzy?
It's so bad right now. They are on pace for the most QB pressures, I believe, recorded since they started keeping all offensive statisticals since 1983. And do you know how many wide receiver yards the Patriots are on pace to amass this year? Because
as a team.
As a team. Not one single receiver. As a team right now.
Like 1,500.
957.
But oh so God. You bring up the pressures
it's
number.
That badge, Arcand, it really
up,
is.
You bring up the pressures number, Fitzy. So I just have to ask, though, won't that number come down a little bit? Like, because half of these pressures, and maybe not half, but a large portion of these pressures are created simply because Jacoby Brissett holds the ball so
long. He's turnover reverse. He wants to be. Yes, he's very protective.
He creates a lot of those pressures. So with Drake May in there, won't that number theoretically just naturally come down, find a little bit more level?
I mean, a pressure is still a recorded pressure. Shime, every time a quarterback for the Patriots this season gets the ball, you know that scene in Raiders of the Lost Ark where Indy escapes the ball that's rolling after
sure.
him?
Mm-hmm.
And then as soon as he's, you know, he's running for his life with the golden idol in his hand, and he comes over that hill, and then there's 500 natives chasing him over that hill. That's what every single dropback for a Patriots quarterback is like this year. They are literally running for their lives. The inability for the tackles to play up to a professional level, the attrition along the guard and interior positions is just going to get one of these guys killed. And yes, Shime, he definitely needs to go get tuned up. He needs to feel what it's like, and there probably may be no greater sim for a quarterback to try to learn what it's like under pressure than the 2024 Patriots. But I'm with you that he is the future, and he'll make it so much more exciting to watch. But I also fear that the guy gets hit so hard, you know, and people are going to play the card. Yeah, Burrow got hit. He went out for a year. Next year, you got Jamar Chase. I don't want to sacrifice a muscle, a bone, or a ligament of Drake Mays just to get a better receiver or tackle next year.
All right, Fitzy, before we let you go, putting the quarterback aside for a minute, this team's strengths were supposed to be the run game and the defense. Neither one of those would look particularly good in the last 2 weeks. What are you more concerned about between these two quarterbacks lighting up your defense and the run game sort of waning over these last 2 weeks as well?
I'm far more concerned about the defense. What happened? Where's the team, Arcand, that in the first week, according to Pro Football Focus, missed 5% or fewer of their tackles? They were the best tackling team in the league by far. And as much as I believe Juwan Bentley is underrated, and we are now seeing the fruits of that underrating bear in the defense as well, I'm concerned about the tackling because, quite frankly, they're gassed. Like the offense, so you could say, you know, 6 1/2 dozen the other, chicken or the egg kind of argument. If the offense can sustain drives, if the running game can get healed, and I think that can heal quicker, then the defense will probably benefit from that as well. But if they're out there 39, 40, 41 minutes a game, you're going to continue to see plays where the Alex Austins of the world are grabbing at the skims of Alan Lazard and just, you know, pulling threads as guys score touchdowns on national TV. It's jarring, but I would probably put the tackling over the run game.
All right, we'll leave it right there then. Fitzy, thanks so much for the time. You can catch him on the Six Rings podcast, post-game show, halftime show, and also the Sunday 7, which is up right now on WEEI.com. We'll talk to you next weekend.
Take a breath, have a beer, enjoy a day, folks, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks. See you, Fitzy.
Right. That Bye. Is the great Nick Fitzy Stevens joining us here on Football Sunday, WEEI. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Quick break. We'll come back and take a look at the slate of games here coming up and preview some of them, maybe even give a pick or two as we roll on here on NFL Sunday.